Hey, how's it going? I'm Dan Williams and you're listening to my new podcast. This has been created in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. With so many people self-isolating and unable to get outdoors, and with an ever-increasing amount of people out of work, an inspiring entrepreneurial explosion is taking place. However, many don't know where to begin or they find the whole process overwhelming. With some of my amazing connections and friends, I want to share some stories and insights to help inspire and ignite that fire within you. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my friend on the show, Stu Jolly. Afternoon, Stu.
How's it going, Dan?
Yeah, good, mate. You?
Yeah, not too bad. Nice and sunny.
Good, good, good. Do you want to just start off, give us a bit of a background and like where you started out and do that? Your place is nice, by the way.
Thanks. There's a bit of sun in my eye, so I am squinting. So I started in health and beauty about 10 years ago. Currently, I work under a business called The Others Beauty Co. And our main brand is called Electric Ink, which is a targeted range of skincare products for guys and girls with tattoos. But if you were to rewind sort of 10 years ago, I literally just come out of university with a degree that I didn't really have much enthusiasm for. I'd studied journalism, film and media, had no contacts, didn't have a clue what to do with myself. So I went on a holiday in France with some mates, and we were staying at campsites and just genuinely getting quite smelly because the campsite didn't have a shower that worked. So we were going in and out of the sea daily. And I thought, just had that weird light bulb moment because my mate had a big pink packet of baby wipes that I should, well, we were all using them. And then I think it was over like literally a beer at night. I said, well, why don't they have these wipes for guys? Why can't they be kind of fragrance with more of a masculine smell? And that's kind of where Wingman kind of originated, which was this giant sized manly wet wipe, basically, that you can take wherever you go.
That's like an oxymoron in itself, a manly wet wipe.
Exactly. You always start with head and work your way down. That was the motto. But it kind of got a bit of pace, and it was more, I suppose, the opportunity wasn't necessarily reinventing the wheel. It was just to take existing product and remarket it in a way that might appeal to men. So that was, that was 10 years ago.
Crazy. So that was actually where Wingman started. So when you were at uni doing journalism and that, when you left uni, you had no interest in going into any career like that?
Not health and beauty. It was
like, I mean the journalist bit.
Yeah, journalist bit. No, like I soon realized, probably about halfway through the degree, I chose Cardiff Uni because my brother went there, and when I was younger I used to go and visit him, and it was a really good party town. Yeah. And that was literally the decision-making done for why I chose Cardiff Uni. But just during the degree, I kind of fell out of love with it. I think any degree that offers kind of like a sandwich course, you can really go out and get amongst the industry and build that network. If I had my time again, that's what I would choose, because so many students who I've spoken to now, they come out of university quite disheartened, because you really do have to build that network from scratch. And I think that was kind of the letdown for me, is that I didn't have that network. Again, if I had my time again, I'd probably choose something where, halfway through the course, you can go out and actually build that industry network.
Yeah, nice. That makes a lot of sense, actually. I've never even thought of that, but everyone else I've been chatting to, and especially with what I'm doing, like, your relationships and your networks are massively important. So that makes
sense. Yeah, usually you can either inherit a network, and obviously that's a really sort of privileged position to be in if your, you know, parents have been in business for some years and stuff. But if you are starting from scratch, it's flipping hard work.
Yeah, that would be mental. And then, so then you sat down having beers on a beach, smelling in France with your mates, and then the wipe idea. So then what did you, like, I know loads of people that have just had an idea that, that's what I'm, especially over a beer. You know, you can walk into any pub in the country at 8 p.m. on a Friday night, and you'll have everyone telling them they're coming up with the next best thing. But the next morning, nothing ever happens. And they'll be talking about that same story a million times over. But
I think no matter how radical or shit the idea, I think it's always worth trying it, because if you don't actually give it a go, like you said, there's that kind of amazing hour where you might be speaking with your mates in a pub, and yes, it's going to work, and you know, this idea is going to blow up. Usually when you wake up the next day, you kind of just go in on yourself and go, oh, that was a terrible idea, I'm not going to do it. But with this one, weirdly, I kind of just had a determination that actually, why not give it a go? You know, it was a case of, can I join the dots? Can I find a manufacturer?
So where did you begin? Did you go?
Just with the power of Google and picking up the phone, weirdly got my wipes manufactured in Israel. And it was, again, I believed in the idea, don't get me wrong. And in the end, we got it to the stage where we were stocked in boots, and I actually sold them into ration packs in the military. Truck driver.
You're skipping over like this massive journey bit though.
So how did I go from idea, sat pissed around a campfire?
Because you're making it sound like effortless. Like,
sorry, it wasn't.
Getting pissed, having okay. Came up with some wipes.
Okay.
Got them made in Israel, got them in boots.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So basically, when I came home from that holiday, I Googled a load of places, literally wet wipe manufacturer. Then I learned and got, I basically said to some of these manufacturers, can you send me some samples? Probably pretended that I was bigger than I actually was and an established business.
Yes.
I was at the time living with my parents, so they were like, what the hell are these boxes doing turning up? And in the end, I think I had probably about 200 samples in my bedroom. So they thought he's some sort of hygiene freak, or what the hell is going on? So that is how I started. And I think you can lean on, sometimes with manufacturers, as I'm sure you guys know with Orion, is at the start, that the only thing you've got to go on is your energy or desire to basically make something happen, because you haven't got cash, you haven't got the resource, and you haven't got, you know, when anyone ever mentions MOQ, minimum order quantity, you've got no idea how many of the things you're going to sell. So from my side, it was just, let's just push on the idea and see where it goes. And having that kind of curiosity, I think, is probably a good one at the start. And this love of trying to crack a nut, you know, an impossible nut. And so with that, I Googled wet wipe manufacturers, managed to find a manufacturer who would make me some. I did all the branding myself on my laptop. It was called Wingman because I thought, actually, as a term, he's the guy who looks after you. You know, he's always got your back. So I thought, actually, there's some legs there. And at the time, I think you do go out and you have to really try. And I don't think anyone's ever born lucky. You've got to go out and really work hard to create your own luck. And there was a BBC program advertised at the time in summer that I saw. It's called Britain's Next Big Thing, presented by the Dragon's Den, old Dragon's Den presenter Theo Pafitis.
Oh, okay.
And they had three buying teams. One was Boots, one was Habitat, and I think the other one was Liberty London. And I thought, well, maybe I could even get my wipes into Boots. And at the time, I was thinking, right, well, I'm just going to do the application online, put in my business idea, Wingman, mail wet wipes, listed the, you know, the needs and benefits, you know, yeah, guys on the go or when you can't access a shower, music festivals, you know, you name it. The application cut through. So I think there were about 6,000 people who applied, and I got down to the last 100. And then there was a pitch day. And I've never been more nervous. And I think that's probably one of the biggest learnings I've had in the last 10 years, is that you have to override this horrible niggling fear of failure or looking, you know, an absolute tit in front of your mates. And really put yourself out there, because the worst, even worse than that, of this thing failing was to ever be left when you're older with a what if. I wonder if that idea would have worked or not. And I think if you can shrug off that any negativity or any fear that this idea might not work, then you can really go out and explore and get stuff wrong and kind of blow shit up. And so for me, the pitch and actually going there and getting microphoned up, and Thea Perfitis, Outside Boots, interviewed me on this BBC program and said, so you're telling me you've not sold a single wipe and you're going into Boots, the largest health and beauty retailer in Europe, if not, you know, as part of a global network, and you're going to go in and pitch this to the buyers. And I just sunk inside myself and thought, yeah, shit, this is actually. And I remember that morning in the hotel, I've got no problem kind of telling the truth. I was sick in my hotel bathroom with nerves, just an absolute quaking mess. Managed to survive the pitch. A lady actually called, who's quite high up in Boots, Annabelle Franks, was one of the panelists, and the idea cut through. So we actually had filming over 3 to 4 months of bringing the idea to life. And the irony was the guy who had pitched her Habitat was asked to make 10 ceramic bowls. And I was asked to make 40,000 wipes. And so that was the next headache, is shit, how am I going to make 40,000 wipes on what essentially is student loan debt?
Yeah.
And I think that was the next thing of just leaning, you know, both my parents are teachers, or were teachers, sorry, but managed to kind of scrape enough together to make that first production run. And tons of learnings there around getting things wrong with manufacture, but it was all guess. It was all exploration. There were no rules. There was no template to follow. And I think that's been a really, really, I think coming into now and where I'm at with my current business is, it doesn't get any easier. There's not suddenly this light bulb moment where like everything will make sense, because you're fighting fires daily, weekly and stuff. So I think letting go of trying to control every variable in your business, because it's exhausting. And certainly I tried that for the first 3 years. And so I think, yeah, just remaining curious and fluid and really open to change is probably the most important thing. And certainly at a time like now with everything going on, I think the businesses that will thrive out of this are the ones that are willing to change and adapt and perhaps let go of things that, okay, might have been working before this virus hit, but actually coming forwards might not longer be relevant. And certainly in terms of consumerism, I think that's going to change massively. So I think, yeah, all of those things have certainly helped along the way.
Yeah, I think every business has to adapt through this, and those that don't, yeah, I don't think they'll make it. But yeah, doesn't mean that people have to radically change, does it? They've definitely got to evolve and do something. And
yeah, and be more relevant. And I think it sounds silly, but if you're selling a commodity like that, that's one thing. And certainly, you know, the essential items being bought. But if you're a brand that's selling non-essential items, you really have to look at yourself and ask, why are people buying you, and actually go further for that customer. And I think that's going to be probably the most important thing, is irrelevant brands will obviously take the biggest hit. And I think that's what every brand's looking for, is how can I be really relevant and really help my customer or engage with them in a way that, you know, benefits their lives.
Yeah, definitely. So as wingman though, with the wipes, you were really relevant at the time, and you got listed in Boots, 40,000, and festivals were booming when people were allowed to actually get together en masse. So then what? Yeah. Like loads of people would be like, you've made it.
Yeah, the perception. So your mates seeing Boots listing and stuff, they automatically think he's made it overnight. The reality is that you're skint, miserable, working ridiculous hours, still yeah, getting a load of stuff wrong. Don't get me wrong, the highlights of, we created this thing called a dry shower at festivals. So you have these tents where guys and girls could go in, use our wipes. I managed to negotiate with Batiste at the time that we needed dry shampoo to support our dry shower. So you'd use our wipes on your body, use dry shampoo on your hair. And the other funny thing was, is that I had no office at the time during the music festival season. So this big lorry turns up outside my parents' house, and it was a really sunny day. And it was 60,000 mini Batiste cans. And And my grandma was staying at the time as well, which was funny. So I just remember my dad's face because these cans or these pallets sat on the front garden in the sunshine, and he was thinking, hang on, how much gas is contained in all of these? Yeah, this thing is potentially a ticking time bomb. And so we quickly tried to get it all into the garage. I think it was across like four or five pallets. And then we took all of that stock and ran these things. But again, the learning was, don't get me wrong, going to every music festival for one summer was great fun just coming out of uni. But the desire, we'd got that wrong. And I was willing to admit that when you go to a music festival, you actually make a conscious decision outside of using a baby wipe each morning. You don't need luxury. You're actually, you know, for that 3 days, it's pure escapism. You go to Glastonbury and you're happy that you're going to smell.
Yeah.
You're going to stink.
Everyone does.
Everyone's in the same boat. And actually the one area I think that brands would really, you know, find a good opportunity to market is that first shower after the festival. Cause you are looking for, when you return home, that first shower is the most epic shower you've ever had.
Yeah.
It's like washing your sins away. And I think that was a massive assumption that we got wrong. And we went there and we realized that we would have sold a lot more if we were selling alcohol or water. And so that was an interesting one. But again, like leaning on friends and family to basically support you has been really, really helpful for me.
Amazing. And then what happened with Wingman?
So managed to raise additional investment. We with the wipes in Boots, I just couldn't, again, like the real steep learning curve with, you know, how do you maintain, how do you operate with profit in a business where, you know, you've got Boots who are, you know, commercial animals and payment terms and, you know, scaling up, and how do you actually influence the shopper going into Boots when, you know, you're on shelf against, you know, all of the big players who have really deep pockets, you know, and usually lean on things like TV advertising to obviously get their awareness out there. So, it was a real fast track learning. And I think the kind of knee jerk reaction for us is, let's shelve the wipes and let's move on to something more mainstream. And it's funny because actually if you rewind, like the idea of the wipes was really novel, and it might have been the right product, but in the wrong place. And actually we found that US truck drivers, when we sold on a men's grooming website in the US, delivered us more volume than being in 200-300 Boots stores. And I think that's a really important one, is that you don't always, you could have the right product, but it just might be in the wrong place.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, just taking a step back and looking at what product you're selling to actually make those decisions. Because sometimes when you're in the thick of it, all you want to do is make that listing work and chuck more money at you know, these retailers. And that's not always the case. It's sometimes having the confidence to pull out and going, actually, I've got a really good product here, but it needs to be sold online. And, you know, if it was the men's wipe we had, you can build a much bigger backstory when people are searching for it online, because you've got that space to market the product. And then we launched shower gels. We again tried to carry that innovation over. So we had a 3-in-1 shower shampoo shave gel.
Yeah.
And then diverted into skincare. I think again, I'm really happy to talk about all of my failures, because they kind of lead on to, you know, with 100 failures, perhaps comes one success, or at least allows you to carry on these stepping stones.
But
the idea for us is that we needed additional SKUs and we needed distribution. Like for us, distribution was everything. We'll make the actual business work once we've like conquered the retail world. And that's what we did in 1 year. Like our goal was, let's get into every supermarket and retail channel in the UK. And we did that. We, you know, as the Superdrug, Boots, Tesco, Morrison, Sainsbury's, we got into every one of them.
Now you're like, wow, now you're everywhere. This is
great. So, like, but again, I think the buyers just felt sorry for me. So again, we probably tailored our sales pitch like perfectly. But the interesting one there was that we couldn't even make one account work, let alone eight or nine. So again, like cash flow started to, you know, hemorrhage. Our margin started to get diluted because we'd entered, you know, the shower gel category is like trading water. It's very little margin. You know that links are going to be on your back. We had shelf space, and then you had links to the right of us, and you know, Nivea to the left. So,
and that was when they were spending loads on advertising links. Yeah, all those big like 90s adverts and stuff.
Yeah, we shouldn't have been there basically. And we again, the promotional frequency of these products. Shower gels, if you're like wanting to build a brand, shower gel is really difficult because people usually buy it on price. So if it's a quid, I buy a shower gel. You know, you flick the cap, you smell it, and you think, yeah, it smells all right. I'll put it in the basket, or your partner might do so. But actually, we really wanted to do something different in it, but that never really truly cut through. So we only did our volume when we were on 50% off. So you just realize it's
your margins are tight, and now they're like,
yeah, really thankless task. And we were selling like on 50% off through Tesco. Don't get me wrong, you start to do really, really good volume. But the most depressing thing, I think, in the 6 years of pushing a very heavy rock up a hill, which was Wingman. Don't get me wrong, there's tons of learnings. I wouldn't change it for the world, because that was kind of like my retail schooling. But the most soul-destroying thing is that when we finally had to shut the business down because we couldn't support our cash flow and, you know, there was no way through. I thought we would at least get a couple of, you know, customers saying, we can't see you on shelf anymore. I didn't get one.
Really?
And the week before, we were doing thousands of units through Tesco. So you're thinking that someone's buying this product. Well, they must care. Surely they'll get behind. But it is in a category that has very little brand loyalty.
Yeah. So
these were all learnings. And again, you might have been able to create that loyalty somewhere else if you're in a different place. Certainly, you've seen things that... you know, deodorant, again, traditionally is quite a hard category in retail, but you've seen some amazing online deodorant brands building real strong loyalty because they've got a really good point of difference. I think Natives, one of them, and a couple of others. So it can be done, but it's just, again, like you might have the right product, but shifting, you know, where it's sold. Those were the end days, and I built my own office, which was this beautiful shipping container. We'd put two together. We were on this hill outside of Bath and had this view to die for and all these aspirations. And I got, you know, it was grim because everything you believed or, you know, you'd been working towards suddenly wasn't there. And you do hit, you know, it's a natural part of the journey. You hit rock bottom and think, shit, what next? And at the time, it was a last ditch attempt, but I thought we could save Wingman by getting it repackaged and rebranded through a design agency. We'd gone to see a couple in London, and actually we then made a trip up to Leeds, and I met a guy called Cy Forster, who runs a design and packaging agency called Robot Food. And Cy, who's been my business partner for the last 3 years, has a very, very, I would say, caring / brutal way of telling you how it is. And his advice for Wingman's, he was said, just shoot it in the head, like end it.
Yeah. You
know, don't need to do a repackage on this one, end it. And I listened to him. So on the train back, I was looking through their portfolio of work, and I was like, right, I need to move on, and I've got no idea what next. And I saw in their portfolio
But at that point, did you think, right, Wingman's dead, you want to move on? But despite all the hardship and pain and all that and the ups and the downs, you were still convinced you wanted to work on your own brand and do something like that still?
Personally, I was like, I still need to find a way. I'm not done yet. It's a really weird one because it almost feels a bit sadistic in that, you know, it's a bit like people who do Ironman events that like they're not sure they're going to finish it, but that kind of like you know, you see some of them and they've got this like smile or glint in their eye that, you know, even if they don't complete it, that's why they're in it, that's why they've committed to this thing. And I think that's what I found, is that parts of running a business or starting up are so thankless and so lonely, and you know, the sleepless nights, the not having anyone to really share that with, whilst, you know, your friends and family are obviously supportive, it's a really, really lonely place. But there was part of me that was like, well, just because this didn't work doesn't mean the next thing, you know, it's not like it's going to follow a pattern. You know, you could go 10 failures, then one success. You could, you know, the next one might work. But it was, it was a feeling of like, and it took time, don't get me wrong. It wasn't like overnight I was like ready to move on and start a new business. It was a week of really letting the dust settle.
It wasn't overnight. It was a week.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I think it probably was longer, but then it didn't. What kind of happened was that, whether it was a desperate need or one that, you know, just came naturally out of Wingman being put to bed, but in Sai's portfolio there was a tattoo skincare range. Wasn't called Electric Ink, but it was all these flat laid designs. And on the it was actually on the train ride back from Leeds, I googled how many people in the UK have got a tattoo, and I think it came back with 1 in 3 people. And then I was like, okay, well, how many people in the US have got a tattoo? 1 in 5. And I was like, everything that I'd done with Wingman was about trying to scale up and appeal to as many people as possible. Like, I wanted a shower gel that sat next to Lynx. And then when you look at Lynx, the only way that they can really make that business work is either through price or through mass advertising on TV. Yeah. And with this, it was like so unapologetically targeted at a group or a community that in itself, I would like, appealed to me, it excited me, because I was like, finally, like, especially, you know, a lot of people have been talking in skincare about specialist ranges, you know, who's your target consumer. And with Wingman, we like, we want it to just be like this cooler big brother to Lynx. But again, that was enough to survive and thrive.
Really, and niche is there, but that's what,
yeah, and niche, yeah, niche is the word, is that just because something's niche doesn't necessarily mean it can't scale or that there isn't a global appeal for it. And that's kind of what got me excited or hooked. And I said to Sai, I was like, have you ever thought about launching this range? And he said, well, no, I don't know how to make the product or launch it into retail. And literally, as Wingman was kind of being put to bed, I was like, I just gripped onto this thing that actually this is where I need to go next. It was real. Again, I had no idea whether it was going to work. I probably at the time was like, this probably isn't going to work. I remember my parents' faces when they said, you're not going to go and get a normal job. And I was like, nah. And they're like, you're doing what? You haven't got any tattoos and you're going to start a tattoo skincare range with products that have never been launched before. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. So there wasn't this huge bulk of market research. There was a bit, don't get me wrong, but a lot of the time early on is you go on like an intuition, or you have to really, really start to try and trust your gut and believe that something's going to come good out of what, you know, for most startups, there's a lot of crap that comes your way first. And yeah, like looked at the need, you know, looked at a tattooed person and said, well, what are their needs for a skincare range? And we saw that tattoos fade over time. The sun damage to tattoos draws out the pigment. That, you know, dead skin cells can build up on top. So actually exfoliating your tattoo is really good. So quite quickly, I was like, well, shit, I've got probably 4 or 5 products here. And then lent on my relationship at Superdrug at the time to go and knock on the door and say, I've got this idea.
Well, that's when it comes back to what you were saying at the beginning about the university and the lack of networking. So after Wingman, you had manufacturers, you had buyers at retailers, suddenly.
And I think that's really important, is that then suddenly none of the things that I'd learned at Wingman were wasted. Because I think that was my biggest fear, that I'd spent 6 years on something that failed. And that was disheartening at the time. And I don't want to gloss over that how miserable I was for a period of time. But all of those learnings suddenly became really essential tools to actually inject into what was phase 2 of a new business. And actually, that, you know, producing a price point that's more stable, making sure that there's enough margin in these products, making sure, you know, you've really invested into the formula. And actually, coming back to this word niche, is that when it sits on the shelf, it is a big, like, we know exactly who we are. We are only communicating to the tattoo audience. So that's kind of been the last two and a half years.
How are you finding it with working with someone else, like with Simon? I know it's probably not day-to-day.
Yeah, like we it's funny because he was the first investor, and again, he probably doesn't mind me saying that he don't get me wrong, he really believed in the idea, but invested in me on the back of a bottle of red wine. And I remember the conversation, there was no Dragon's Den, like me being in a suit, like nervously shaking. It was literally saying to him, I've got things wrong, and I'm really happy to talk about my failures because I know that they will equip me with what I need to go forwards. And it was literally late at night, and like I said, whether I caught Si at the right time or wrong time, because he was already a bottle of red wine in, he said, I'll invest. I believe in you. I believe in what we can do together. And away we went. Suddenly I had like this new, I think when you suddenly got a small bit of investment, or just probably actually belief, I think that's the one thing you look for. It's just, as soon as there's two people who believe in an idea, you gather momentum, you gather this energy. And I think that's kind of just saddling up with Si and seeing how his team approached the design and packaging, presenting it in Superdrug, seeing their response. It was all this kind of like validating, again, what I believe to be an opportunity. And it was really funny because that opportunity just got like bigger and bigger. So like within the first year, we were in Urban Outfitters globally. We were just about to secure a launch with Boots, and we had, I'd say, probably about 10 or 15 online retailers, 5 international distributors, and things were going well. And the reason why I'm giving the highlights reel, because that's what you ever see on Facebook or, you know, on people's LinkedIn, but underneath, I was making some of the mistakes that I've made with Wingman. Again, I was getting drawn into distributor conversations that weren't value adding to my business. Actually, what they were doing is just taking away my time. Again, we were chasing too much distribution rather than focusing on making, you know, your core accounts work really well.
You can see how people fall into that though, because it's flattering, isn't it? Like from an ego perspective, and actually we'll come on to ask you about a couple of books you're reading in a sec, but from an ego perspective, if you suddenly get retailers really keen to list your brand, you can get way too carried away and excited and thinking, that's it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not the right move or strategy for your brand, especially when you're just talking about the niche and everything else. But
yeah,
you can easily, you know, you can get carried away with it and just, it's
flattering, isn't it? It's ego knocking. And I think once you've had that absolutely beaten out of you, being really open to change. And I think, yeah, that... Don't get me wrong, some brands go into retail and you know, survive, grow, and there's a really healthy partnership with that retailer. But when you've poured all of your blood, sweat, and tears into a brand and product range, only to find that, you know, that range is then pulled after 12 months because you haven't promoted it enough, or you haven't, you know, delivered on all of your KPIs, or whatever the thing might be. There's you know, you only have to read what retailers are up to see is that, and I'm not saying all retailers like that at all either, but the bit which I got from Electric Ink that gave me so much hope and energy was the customer response. And I think that was, again, coming back to Wingman, where nobody wrote in to say,
yeah,
I can't find you in store anymore. Like, you've been running this business 6-7 years and thousands of people buying your product. Nobody gave a shit. And I think I could literally laugh at it now. At the time, it was, again, that was ego knocking. But the what happened with Electric Ink is that suddenly you had people didn't just like the product, but they're like, this product's built for me. Like, I love it. Like, it didn't exist before. And that kind of, that relationship we'd never had with Wingman. And that was one that I wanted to explore much further. And coming back to making mistakes, and I think yeah, if you try and make a mistake once and learn from it. But I was slowly being pulled in, and we put the brakes on. We got pulled out of Superdrug for several reasons, even though our range was actually selling better than L'Oreal's tattoo product at the time. But we got pulled out, and I was like, right, this has to stop, because otherwise I'm going to do exactly what we did with Wingman, and we've got something here. And coming back to is that the smallest part of the business, the bit that was actually producing the least revenue, was our website. And at the time I was seeing all these verticals launching in the States, whether it was Glossier and you know, really, really hard hitting D2C beauty brands. And their relationship with the customer, not the retailer, just fascinated me, because you can put so much more love into your brand when that whole experience is controlled by you, the brand. And you know, whether it's the unboxing experience when it arrives through the door, and the extra you invest into packaging or formula, you don't have to cut any of the corners to make it work
for you. Well, you're now thinking about your consumer massively, aren't you? So
it's putting it resonate. That's exactly it. Is that with Wingman and the early days of Electric Ink, I was hell-bent on making everything work for the retailer, because that was the dream, is like, let's just get distribution and then the customer will see it on shelf and buy it. Well, it never happens. You get a big pipe fill order at the start, and then your rate of sale drops off a cliff, and you're like, well, shit, no, the customer doesn't care, because you've not done any type of marketing to build that relationship with the customer.
Yeah.
Coming back to that building that kind of relationship with directly with the customer, suddenly the retailer's not there, and you're like, well, actually I can talk to this person now. I can actually learn what they like, what they don't like. Well, actually this is their favorite product, but this one, you know, needs to have XYZ improved on it. And then you're like, well, this is how it should be. This is a healthy relationship. It's not one that's dictated by range reviews or performance markers that doesn't really have the customer's needs at the heart of everything you do. And I think that was the biggest adjustment, is that now the customer has to have the final say, be at the heart of every decision we make. And that's why I was like, I'm pulling out of all retail. And that's what we did about eight months ago.
Oh, amazing. And I suppose you're kicking stuff around with Simon on everything you're doing now, so it's not you just blindly going down the route as well, is it? But every brand, like, no matter what market you're in or industry you're in, it's got to be all about the consumer, because that's.
I think you forget it though. I think people genuinely.
Yeah, definitely get wrapped up, and you do and easily forget what your purpose is from all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you?
That is a beer being open, but it is a Friday, so hopefully you let me off.
Every day is a Friday at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Have you had you mentioned Annabelle Franks, I think, from Boots earlier. I don't know if she's featured heavily at all, but have you had like a mentor in the background, or someone that you've always been able to like speak to about stuff or not?
Yeah, I again, like businesses, I think they've, you know, naturally, whether it's your location or the relationship, you know, I've had several kind of mentors as such along the way. I think now, the stage of life I'm in now, is that I find actually, you know, like even talking to you with completely separate business, actually your network and sharing ideas is almost like a mentorship in itself.
Yeah.
It's not this traditional, you're a young kid in business, I therefore need to find someone who's been there, done it, and got, you know, we're all learning together. And I think that shared learning is as valuable as finding one person who, you know, basically offloads their entire wisdom. Because again, coming back to, I think we chatted about this before we start recording, is, you know, reading autobiographies, it's one person with, you know, their life was at a time where, you know, certain markets might be different to what they are now, or, you know, what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another. And I think, having that shared network is probably like the new mentor anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, massively. I put loads of value on that. Hence why I'm doing this, actually.
Yeah.
It's purely self-act, because I just get to talk to get all these insights from every single person.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And what we were talking about, some books that you were reading and an author that you really like at the minute.
Yeah, so like I did early on in Wingman, by, I think it was like Peter Jones's book and Duncan Bannatyne and all the Dragon's Den lot, and then realised I have nothing in common with any of them. I don't want to drive a mirrored Maybach car and have a chauffeur and wear really shit looking suits. So like for me, I had to grow up and go through a stage of actually finding out who I am. I actually didn't, you know, whilst I go into London to do business, like my heart is by the sea, and actually having the confidence to move away from London and be by the coast was a scary decision, because I knew that, you know, some things, you know, will it affect, you know, business, number of meetings and stuff. But actually you find, again, like with any new startup, is you find a way. And now, you know, it's a busy 2 days when you do go into London, but it's the sacrifice for what actually makes me tick outside of business. And coming on to books I read is, again, I've moved away from kind of autobiographies, which, don't get wrong, there's a few good ones out there, but kind of actually more like philosophy and Ryan Holiday, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of. His books really resonate with me. There's just tons of people who I think offer, whether it's direct business advice or life advice or whatever, there's basically, everyone wants a happy life in work, in personal life and in business. And I think a lot of these guys, who they seem to strike the right balance. And again, I think it's okay not to want to run a multi-billion pound company. And I think a lot of these guys try and just achieve some sort of balance. I want to be a person personally who can walk a dog on the beach in the evening and not be on my phone back-to-back calls. And it has taken me like 5 years to actually, you know, really, really allow that to sink in, because that is what I want.
Yeah. Like, happiness is invaluable, isn't it?
So doing
the right thing and something you love, like, everything else will fall into place. I firmly believe that.
Yeah, and actually, this is probably the, you know, whilst there's tons of change going on at the moment in light of the pandemic, so I think actually the one thing it has forced everyone in isolation to do is look at themselves, their own lives, and actually really challenge, was I happy with my existence before this? Because, yeah, you run around at a million miles an hour, and don't get me wrong, you know, having the ability for face-to-face contact and all the socializing that went on, but actually, like, was there anything missing, or actually did I need to take more things out of my life and live a bit more simplistically? I don't know, there's certainly time now to really reflect on what it is you want, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Cheers, mate, I really appreciate that. I won't take up any more of your precious time.
Yeah, no worries.
Thanks a lot for coming on, really appreciate it. I'm probably going to just thinking out, like there's been so many people talking about similar things. I'll probably get, I'll do like series two and probably get a couple of people on at the same time and have a bit more of a chat, like with a few people on the call.
I think that'd be that sounds good. Cause like I said, it was more personal journey, but yeah, there's kind of seismic changes to what we're doing now, and tons of failures still going on, but it's basically bouncing along, failing through to get to where it is you want to get to, which in, yeah, we're 10 years in now and feel like we're still heading in the right direction. So
awesome. Well, cheers, buddy. Have a good weekend. Cool. I'll get you back on anyway. All right, cheers.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.